And so I went back to Hesherek. He said he was still curious about Kerik, and that he'd like to know Anhek's mind. He told me that he would give me as much gold as I already had if I sent him word of what he has said in the High Councils here, in the palace for a year. At first I said no, because I knew it would be dishonorable. But then he showed me the gold, and I could not say no any more. From where he watched, Geryon could see the expressions of those in the hall below. Their faces had a curious mingling of pity and contempt, as Jarvik's story continued. It was then, Anhek, that your men captured one of my messengers, and I was banished to Jarvik's home. At first I did not mind. I could still play with my gold. But again it wasn't long before it seemed I didn't have enough. I sent a fast ship through the boar to Darin with a message to Asherak, begging him to find something else for me to do, to earn more gold. When the ship came back, Asherak was aboard her, and we sat down and talked about what I could do to increase my hoard.
You are doubly a traitor than Jarvik,
Anhek said in a voice that was almost sad.
You have betrayed me, and you have broken the oldest law in Kerik. No Angarak has set foot on this soil since the days of Bear Shoulders himself.
Jarvik shrugged. I didn't really care by then. Asherak had a plan, and it seemed like a good one to me. If we could get through the city a few at a time, we could hide an army in the ruined southern wings of the palace. With surprise and a bit of luck, we could kill Anhek and the other Alorn kings, and I could take the throne of Jarek and maybe of all Aloria as well.
And what was Asherak's price? The wolf demanded, his eyes narrowing. What did he want in return for making you king?
A thing so small that I laughed when he told me what he wanted. But he said that he'd not only give me the crown, but a room full of gold if I would get it for him.
What was it?
He said that there was a boy, about 14, in the party of King Fulrak of Sindaria. He told me that as soon as that boy was delivered to him, he would give me more gold than I could count, and the throne of Kerik as well.
King Fulrak looked startled. The boy Geryon? Why would Asherak want him?
Aunt Paul's single frightened gasp carried even up to where Geryon was concealed. Durnek! She said in a ringing voice. But Durnek was already on his feet and racing toward the door, with Silk close behind him. Aunt Paul spun with eyes blazing, and the white lock at her brow almost incandescent in the midnight of her hair. The Earl of Jarvik flinched as her glare fell on him. If anything has happened to the boy, Jarvik, men will tremble at the memory of your fate for 1,000 years.
It had gone far enough.
Geryon was ashamed and a little frightened by the fury of Aunt Paul's reaction. I'm all right, Aunt Paul, he called down to her through the narrow slot in the wall. I'm up here. Geryon? She looked up, trying to see him. Where are you? Up here, near the ceiling, behind the wall. How did you get up there? I don't know. Some men were chasing me, and I ran. This is where I ended up. Come down here at once. I don't know how, Aunt Paul. I ran so far and took so many turns that I don't know how to get back. I'm lost. All right, she said, regaining her composure. Stay where you are. We'll think of a way to get you down. I hope so.
Chapter 19 Well, it has to come out someplace, King Anhig said, squinting up toward the spot where Geryon waited nervously. All he has to do is follow it.
and walk directly into the arms of Asherak the Murgo. He's better off staying where he is.
Asherak is fleeing for his life. He's nowhere in the palace now.
As I recall, he's not even supposed to be in the kingdom, Aunt Paul said pointedly.
All right, Paul, Mr. Wolf said.
He called up,
Garion, which way does the passage run?
It seems to go on toward the back of the hall where the thrones are. I can't tell for sure if it turns off or not. It's pretty dark up here.
We'll pass you a couple of torches. Set one at the spot where you are now, and then go on down the passage with the other. As long as you can see the first one, you will be going in a straight line.
That's very clever, said Silk. I wish I were 7,000 years old, so I could solve problems so easily.
Wolf let that pass.
I still think the safest way would be to get some ladders and break a hole in the wall,
Beric said.
King Unheg looked pained.
Couldn't we try Belgarath's suggestion first?
Beric shrugged.
You're the king.
Thank you, Unheg said dryly.
A warrior fetched a long pole and two torches were passed up to Garion.
If the line of the passageway holds straight, he should come out somewhere in the royal apartments, said Unheg.
Interesting, King Rodar said with one raised eyebrow. It would be most enlightening to know if the passage led to the royal chambers or from them.
It is entirely possible that the passageway is just some long-forgotten escape route,
Unheg said in an injured tone.
Our history, after all, has not been all that peaceful. There's no need to suspect the worst, is there?
Oh, of course not, King Rodar said blandly. No need at all. Garion set one of the torches beside the slot in the wall and followed the dusty passageway, looking back often to be sure that the torch was still in plain sight. Eventually he came to a narrow door which opened into the back of an empty closet. The closet was attached to a splendid-looking bedchamber, and outside there was a broad, well-lighted corridor. Several warriors were coming down the corridor, and Garion recognized Torvik, the huntsman, among them.
"Here I am,"
he said, stepping out with a surge of relief.
"You've been busy, haven't you?"
Torvik said with a grin.
"Well, it wasn't my idea."
"Well, let's get you back to King Unheg. The lady, your aunt, seems concerned about you."
Well, she's angry with me, I suppose, Garion said, falling into step beside the broad-shouldered man.
More than likely. Women are almost always angry with us for one reason or another. It's one of the things you'll have to get used to as you get older.
Aunt Paul was waiting at the door to the throne room. There were no reproaches, not as yet, at any rate. For one brief moment, she clasped him fiercely to her, and then looked at him gravely.
"We've been waiting for you, dear,"
she said almost calmly. Then she led him to where the others waited.
"In my grandmother's quarters, you say?"
Unheg was talking to Torvik.
"What an astonishing thing. I remember her as a crotchety old lady who walked with a cane."
"Oh, no one's born old, Unheg," King Rodar said with a sly look. "I'm sure there are many explanations, Unheg,"
Queen Porin said.
"My husband is just teasing you."
"One of the men looked into the passage, Your Majesty,"
Torvik said tactfully. "The dust is very thick. It's possible. It hasn't been used for centuries."
"What an astonishing thing," Unheg said again.
The matter was then delicately allowed to drop, though King Rodar's sly expression spoke volumes. The Earl of Selene coughed politely.
"I think, young Garion, we have a story for us."
"I expect he has," said Aunt Paul, turning toward Garion. "I seem to remember telling you to stay in your room." "Asherak was in my room, and he had warriors with him. He tried to make me come to him. When I wouldn't, he said that he'd had me once and could get me again. I didn't understand exactly what he meant, but I told him that he'd have to catch me first. Then I ran.
Brand, the Raven Warder, chuckled. I don't see how you can find much fault with that, Polgara. I think that if I found a Grawlum priest in my room, I would probably run away, too.
You sure it was Asherak?
Silk asked.
Geryon nodded. I've known him for a long time. All my life, I guess. And he knew me. He called me by name.
I think I'd like to have a long talk with this Asherak,
Anheg said. I want to ask him some questions about all of the mischief he has been stirring up in my kingdom.
I doubt if you'll find him, Anheg.
Wolf spoke.
He seems to be more than just a Grolem priest. I touched his mind once, in Muros. It is not an ordinary mind.
I'll amuse myself with a search for him, Anheg said with a bleak expression. Not even a Grolem can walk on water. So I believe I'll just seal off all of the ports in Krek, and then put my warriors to work searching the mountains and forest for him. They get fat and troublesome in the wintertime anyway. It will give them something to do.
The driving fat, troublesome warriors into the snow in the dead of winter isn't going to make you a popular king, Anheg, Rodar observed.
Offer a reward, Silk suggested. That way, you get the job done, and you stay popular as well.
That's an idea. What kind of reward would you suggest, Prince Keldar?
Promise to equal the weight of Asherak's head in gold. That should lure the fattest warrior away from the dice cup and the ale keg.
Anheg winced.
He's a Grolem, Silk said. They probably won't find him, but they will take the kingdom apart looking. Your gold is safe. Your warriors get a bit of exercise. You get a reputation for generosity, and with every man in Kerik looking for him with an axe, Asherak's going to be much too busy hiding to stir up any more mischief. A man whose head is more valuable to others than it is to himself has little time for foolishness.
Prince Keldar, you are a devious man.
Oh, I try, King Anheg, Silk said with an ironic bow.
I don't suppose you'd care to come work for me, the King of Kerik offered.
Anheg, Rodar protested. Silk sighed. Blood, King Anheg, I am committed to my uncle by our bonds of kinship. I would be interested to hear your offer, though. It might help in future negotiations about compensation for my services.
Queen Porin's laughter was like a small silver bell, and King Rodar's face became tragic.
You see, I am absolutely surrounded by traitors. What is a poor fat old man to do?
A grim-looking warrior entered the hall and marched up to Anheg.
It is done, King. Do you want to look at his head?
No,
Anheg said shortly.
Should we put it on a pole near the harbor?
No.
Jarvik was a brave man once, and my kinsman by marriage. Have him delivered to his wife for a proper burial.
The warrior bowed and left the hall. This problem of the Grolem, Asherak, interests me, Queen Aelina said to Aunt Paul. Might we not between us, Lady Polgara, devise a way to locate him?
Her expression had a certain quality of self-importance to it.
Mr. Wolf spoke quickly before Aunt Paul could answer.
Bravely spoken, Aelina. But we would not allow the Queen of Kerik to take such a risk. I am sure your skills are formidable, but such a search opens the mind completely. If Asherak felt you looking for him, he would retaliate instantly. Polgara would not be in any danger, but I am afraid your mind could be blown out like a candle. It would be a great shame to have the Queen of Kerik live out the rest of her life as a raving lunatic.
Aelina turned suddenly very pale and did not see the sly wink Mr. Wolf directed at Anheg.
Anheg said firmly,
I could not permit it. My queen is far too precious for me to allow her to take such a terrible risk.
I must accede to the will of my lord, Aelina said in a relieved tone. By his command, I withdraw my suggestion.
The courage of my queen honors me, Enhig said, with an absolutely straight face.
Aelina bowed and backed away rather quickly. Aunt Paul looked at Mr. Wolf with one raised eyebrow, but let it pass. Wolf's expression became more serious as he rose from the chair in which he had been sitting.
I think that the time has come to make some decisions. Things are beginning to move too fast for any more delay.
He looked at Enhig.
Is there some place where we can speak without risk of being overheard?
There's a chamber in one of the towers. I thought about it before our first meeting, but...
He paused and looked at Chohag.
You shouldn't have let it concern you, Chohag said. I can manage the stairs if I have to. And it would have been better for me to have been a little inconvenienced than to have had Yavik's spy overhearing us.
I'll stare at Geryon, Dunnick said to Aunt Paul.
Aunt Paul shook her head firmly. No. As long as Asherak is on the loose in Jerek, I don't want him out of my sight.
Shall we go, then? Mr. Wolf said. It is getting late, and I want to leave first thing in the morning. The trail I was following is getting colder.
Queen Aelina, still looking shaken, stood to one side with Porin and Sila, and made no effort to follow as King Anheg led the way from the throne room. I'll let you know what happens, King Rodar signaled to his queen. Of course, Porin gestured back. Her face was placid, but the snap of her fingers as they spoke betrayed her irritability. Calmly, child, Rodar's fingers told her. We are guests here and have to obey local customs. Whatever my lord commands, she replied, with a tilt of her hands that spoke whole volumes of sarcasm. With Hetar's help, King Chohag managed the stairs, although his progress was painfully slow.
I apologize for this, he puffed, stopping halfway up to catch his breath. It's as tiresome for me as it is for you.
King Anheg posted guards at the foot of the stairs, then came up and closed the heavy door behind him.
Light a fire, cousin, he said to Beric. We might as well be comfortable.
Beric nodded and put a torch to the wood in the fireplace. The chamber was round and not too spacious, but there was adequate room for them all and chairs and benches to sit on. Mr. Wolf stood at one of the windows, looking down at the twinkling lights of Val Alorn below.
I have always been fond of towers, he said almost to himself. My master lived in one like this, and I enjoyed the time I spent there.
I'd have given my life to have known Aldor, Chohag said softly. Was he really surrounded by light, as some say?
He seemed quite ordinary to me, Mr. Wolf said. I lived with him for 5 years, before I even knew who he was.
Was he really as wise as we are told? King Anheg asked.
Probably wiser. I was a wild and errant boy when he found me dying in a snowstorm outside his tower. He managed to tame me, though it took him several 100 years to do it.
He turned from the window with a deep sigh.
To work, then.
Where will you go to take up the search? King Thorek asked.
Kamar. I found the trail there. I think it led down into Arendia.
We'll send warriors with you, Anheg said. After what's happened here, it looks like the Grolems may try to stop you.
No, Wolf said firmly. Warriors are useless in dealing with the Grolems.
I cannot move with an army underfoot, and I won't have time to explain to the King of Arendia why I'm invading his kingdom with a horde of troops at my back. It takes even longer to explain things to Erons than it does to Elons. Impossible as that sounds.
Don't be uncivil, Father. It is their world, too, and they are concerned.
You wouldn't necessarily need an army, Belgarath, King Rodar said.
But would it not be prudent to take along a few good men?
There is very little that Pogara and I cannot deal with by ourselves. And Silk, Barak, and Jarek are along to deal with the more mundane problems. The smaller our group, the less attention it will attract.
He turned to Hahag. As long as we are on the subject, I would like to have your son Hetar with us. We're likely to need his rather specialized talents.
Impossible, Hetar said flatly. I have to remain with my father.
No, Hetar. I do not intend for you to live out your life as a cripple's legs.
I've never felt any restriction in serving you, Father. There are plenty of others with the same talents I have. Let the Ancient One choose another.
How many Shadarim are there among the Algars?
Mr. Wolf asked gravely. Hetar looked at him sharply, as if trying to tell him something with his eyes. King Shohag drew in his breath sharply.
Hetar, is this true?
Hetar shrugged.
It may be, Father. I did not think it was important.
Shohag looked at Mr. Wolf. The wolf nodded.
It is true. I knew it the first time I saw him. He is a Shadar. He had to find it out for himself, though.
The old king's eyes suddenly brimmed with tears.
My son, he said proudly, pulling Hetar into a rough embrace.
It is no great thing, Father,
Hetar said quietly, as if suddenly embarrassed.
What are they talking about?
Garin whispered to Silk.
It's something the Algars take very seriously, Silk said softly. They think that there are some people who can talk to horses with their thoughts alone. They call these people Shadarim, clan chiefs of the horses. It is very rare, maybe only two or three in a whole generation. It's instant nobility for any Algar who has it. Kohag's going to explode with pride when he gets back to Algaria.
Is it that important?
Silk shrugged. Oh, the Algars seem to think so. All the clans gather at the stronghold when they find a new Shadar.
The whole nation celebrates for 6 weeks.
There are all kinds of gifts. Hetar will be a rich man if he chooses to accept them. He may not. He is a strange man.
You must go,
Hohag said to Hetar.
The pride of Algaria goes with you. Your duty is clear.
As my father decides, Hetar said reluctantly.
Good, Mr. Wolf said. How long will it take you to go to Algaria? Pick up a dozen or so of your best horses and take them to Kamar.
Hetar thought for a moment.
2 weeks, if there are not any blizzards in the mountains of Sindaria.
We'll all leave here in the morning, then. Anheg can give you a ship. Take the horses along the Great North Road to the place a few leagues east of Kamar, where another road strikes off to the south. It fords the Greater Kamar River and runs down to join the Great West Road at the ruins of Owachon in northern Erindia. We'll meet you there in 2 weeks.
Hetar nodded.
We'll also be joined at Owachon by an Asturian errand, and somewhat later by a Mimbret. They might be useful to us in the south.
Anheg said cryptically.
And we'll also fulfill the prophecies.
Wolf shrugged, his bright blue eyes twinkling suddenly.
I don't object to fulfilling prophecies, as long as it does not inconvenience me too much.
Is there anything we can do to help in the search? Brand wanted to know.
You will have enough to do. No matter how our search turns out, it is obvious that the Angaraks are getting ready for some kind of major action. If we are successful, they might hesitate. But Angaraks don't think the way we do. Even after what happened at Vomimbre, they may decide to risk an all-out attack on the west. It could be that they're responding to prophecies of their own that we don't know anything about. In any event, I think you should be ready for something fairly major from them. You will need to make preparations.
Anheg grinned wolfishly.
We have been preparing for them for 5,000 years. This time, we will purge the whole world of this Angorak infection. When Torak One Eye awakes, he will find himself as alone as Mara, and just as powerless.
Maybe. But don't plan the victory celebration until the war's over. Make your preparations quietly, and don't stir up the people in your kingdoms any more than you have to. The West is crawling with Grolems, and they are watching everything we do. The trail I'll be following could lead me into Khralmurgos, and I'd rather not have to deal with an army of Murgos massed on the border.
I can play the watching game, too, King Rodar said, with a grim look on his plump face. Probably even better than the Grolems. It's time to send a few more caravans to the east. The Angoraks won't move without help from the east, and the Malorians will have to cross over into Garagnadrak before they deploy south. A bribe or two here and there, a few barrels of strong ale in the right mining camps. Who knows what a bit of diligent corruption might turn up? A chance word or two could give us several months' warning.
If they are planning anything major, the Tulls will be building supply dumps along the eastern escarpment. Tulls are not bright, and it is easy to observe them without being seen, said Kohag. I will increase my patrols along the mountains. With a little luck, we might be able to anticipate their invasion. Is there anything else we can do to help you, Belgarath?
Mr. Wolf thought for a moment. Suddenly he grinned. I am certain that our thief is listening very hard, waiting for one of us to speak his name, or the name of the thing he stole. Sooner or later, someone is bound to make a slip, and once he locates us, he will be able to hear every word we say. Instead of trying to gag ourselves, I think it might be better if we gave him something to listen to, if you can arrange it. I'd like to have every minstrel and storyteller in the North start retelling certain old stories. You know the ones. When the names start sounding in every village marketplace north of the Kamar River, it will set up a roaring in his ears like a thunderstorm. If nothing else, it will give us freedom to speak. In time, he will get tired of it and stop listening.
It's getting late, Father, Aunt Paul reminded him.
Wolf nodded. We are playing a deadly game, he told them all. But our enemies are playing one just as deadly. Their danger is as great as ours, and right now no one can predict what will finally happen. Make your preparations and send out men you can trust to keep watch. Be patient. Don't do anything rash. That could be more dangerous than anything else right now. At the moment, Bulgara and I are the only ones who can act. You are going to have to trust us. I know that sometimes some of the things we have done have seemed a bit strange, but there are reasons for what we do. Please, do not interfere again. I will get word to you now and then about our progress. If I need you to do anything else, I'll let you know. All right?
The kings nodded gravely, and everyone rose to their feet. Anheg stepped over to Mr. Wolf.
Could you come to my study in an hour or so, Belgarath? I'd like to have a few words with you and Pilgara before your departure. If you wish, Anheg.
Come along, Geryon. We have packing to take care of.
Geryon, a little awed by the solemnity of the discussions, rose quietly and followed her to the door. Chapter 20 King Anheg's study was a large cluttered room high in a square tower. Books bound in heavy leather lay everywhere,
and strange devices with gears and pulleys and tiny brass chains sat on tables and stands. Intricately drawn maps with beautiful illuminations were pinned up on the walls, and the floor was littered with scraps of parchment covered with tiny writing. King Anhig, his coarse black hair hanging in his eyes, sat at a slanted table in the soft glow of a pair of candles, studying a large book written on thin sheets of crackling parchment. The guard at the door let them enter without a word, and Mr. Wolf stepped briskly into the center of the room.
"You wanted to see us, Anhig?"
The King of Kerak straightened from his book and lay it aside.
"Belgoroth," he said with a short nod of greeting. "Belgara."
He glanced at Geryon, who stood uncertainly near the door.
"I meant what I said earlier. I am not going to let him out of my sight until I know for certain that he is out of reach of the Grolem Asherak."
"Anything you say, Belgara. Come in, Geryon." "I see that you're continuing your studies," the wolf said approvingly, glancing at the littered room. "There's so much to learn," Anhig said with a helpless gesture that included all of the welter of books and papers and strange machines. "I have a feeling that I might have been happier if you had never introduced me to this impossible task."
"You asked me," Mr. Wolf said simply.
"You could have said no," Anhig laughed.
Then his brutish face turned serious. He glanced once at Geryon and began to speak in an obviously oblique manner.
"I don't want to interfere, but the behavior of this Asherak concerns me."
Geryon moved away from Aunt Paul and began to study one of the strange little machines sitting on a nearby table, being careful not to touch it.
"We'll take care of Asherak," Aunt Paul said. But Anhig persisted.
"There have been rumors for centuries that you and your father have been protecting—"
He hesitated, glanced at Geryon, then continued smoothly.
"A certain thing that must be protected at all costs. Several of my books speak of it."
"You read too much, Anhig."
Anhig laughed again.
"It passes the time, Belgara. The alternative is drinking with my earls, and my stomach's getting a little delicate for that. And my ears as well. Have you any idea of how much noise a hallful of drunk clerics can make? My books don't shout or boast, and they don't fall down or slide under the tables and snore. They are much better company, really."
"Foolishness."
"We are all foolish at one time or another," Anhig said philosophically. "But let's go back to this other matter. If those rumors I mentioned are true, aren't you taking some serious risks? Your search is likely to be very dangerous."
"No place is really safe," Mr. Wolf said.
"Why take chances you don't have to? Asherak isn't the only Grolem in the world, you know that."
"I can see why they call you Anhig the Sly," Wolf said with a smile.
"Wouldn't it be safer to leave this certain thing in my care until you return?"
"We have already found that not even Val Alorn is safe from the Grolems, Anhig. The mines of Clarmurgos and Garagnadrak are endless, and the Grolems have more gold at their disposal than you could even imagine. How many others like Arvik have they bought? The old wolf and I are very experienced at protecting this certain thing you mentioned. It will be safe with us."
"Thank you for your concern, however," Mr. Wolf added.
"This matter concerns us all."
Geryon, despite his youth and occasional recklessness, was not stupid. It was obvious that what they were talking about involved him in some way, and quite possibly had to do with the mystery of his parentage as well. To conceal the fact that he was listening as hard as he could, he picked up a small book bound in a strangely textured black leather. He opened it, but there were neither pictures nor illuminations, merely a spidery-looking script that seemed strangely repulsive. Aunt Paul, who always seemed to know what he was doing, looked over at him.
"What are you doing with that?" she said sharply. Just looking. I can't read it. Put it down immediately, she told him.
King Anheg smiled.
You wouldn't be able to read it anyway, Geryon. It's written in old Angarak.
What are you doing with that filthy thing anyway? You, of all people, should know that it's forbidden, Aunt Paul asked Anheg.
It's only a book, Paul, Mr. Wolf said. It does not have any power, unless it is permitted to. Besides, Anheg said, rubbing thoughtfully at the side of his face, the book gives us clues to the mind of our enemy. That is always a good thing to know.
You can't know Torek's mind, and it's dangerous to open yourself to him. He can poison you without your even knowing what's happening.
I don't think there's any danger of that, Paul. Anheg's mind is well trained enough to avoid the traps in Torek's book, Wolf said. They are pretty obvious, after all.
Anheg looked across the room at Geryon and beckoned to him. Geryon crossed and stood in front of the King of Skarrak.
You're an observant young man, Geryon, Anheg said gravely. You have done me a service today. And you can call on me at any time for service in return. Know that Anheg of Skarrak is your friend.
He extended his right hand, and Geryon took it in his own without thinking. King Anheg's eyes grew wide suddenly, and his face paled slightly. He turned Geryon's hand over and looked down at the silvery mark on the boy's palm. Then Aunt Paul's hands were also there, firmly closing Geryon's fingers and removing him from Anheg's grip.
It is true, then, Anheg said softly.
Enough. Don't confuse the boy, Aunt Paul said.
Her hands were still firmly holding Geryon's.
Come along, dear. It's time to finish packing.
And she turned and led him from the room. Geryon's mind was racing. What was there about the mark on his hand that had so startled Anheg? The birthmark, he knew, was hereditary. Aunt Paul had once told him that his father's hand had had the same mark. But why would that be of interest to Anheg? It had gone too far. His need to know became almost unbearable. He had to know about his parents, about Aunt Paul, about all of it. If the answers hurt, then they would just have to hurt. At least he would know. The next morning was clear, and they left the palace for the harbor quite early. They all gathered in the courtyard where the sleighs waited.
There's no need for you to come out in the cold like this, Meryl,
Barak told his fur-robed wife as she mounted the sleigh beside him.
I have a duty to see my lord safely to his ship, she replied, with an arrogant lift of her chin.
Barak sighed.
Oh, whatever you wish.
With King Anheg and Queen Aelina in the lead, the sleighs whirled out of the courtyard and into the snowy streets. The sun was very bright and the air was crisp. Geryon rode silently with Silk and Hetar.
Why so quiet, Geryon? A lot of things have happened here that I don't understand.
No one can understand everything, Hetar said rather sententiously.
Jereks are a violent and moody people, Silk said. They don't even understand themselves. It's not just them, Geryon said, struggling with the words. It's Aunt Paul and Mr. Wolf and Asherak. All of it. Things are happening too fast. I can't get it all sorted out.
Events are like horses, Hetar told him. Sometimes they run away. After they have run for a while, though, they will start to walk again. And then there will be time to put everything together.
I hope so, Geryon said dubiously, and fell silent again.
The sleighs came around a corner into the broad square before the Temple of Belar. The blind woman was there again, and Geryon realized that he had been half expecting her. She stood on the steps of the temple and raised her staff. Unaccountably, the horses which pulled the sleighs stopped, trembling, despite the urgings of the drivers.
"Hail, Great One," the blind woman said. I wish thee well on thy journey.
The sleigh in which Geryon was riding had stopped closest to the temple steps, and it seemed that the old woman was speaking to him. Almost without thinking, he answered,
"Thank you, but why do you call me that?"
She ignored the question.
"Remember me,"
she commanded, bowing deeply.
"Remember, Matya, when thou comest into thine inheritance."
It was the second time she had said that, and Geryon felt a sharp pang of curiosity.
"What inheritance?"
But Barak was roaring with fury and struggling to throw off the fur robe and draw his sword at the same time. King Anheg was also climbing down from his sleigh, his coarse face livid with rage.
"No,"
Aunt Paul said sharply from nearby.
"I'll tend to this."
She stood up.
"Hear me, witch woman,"
she said in a clear voice, casting back the hood of her cloak.
"I think you see too much with those blind eyes of yours. I'm going to do you a favor, so that you will no longer be troubled by the darkness and these disturbing visions which grow out of it."
"Strike me down, if it please thee, Bulgara,"
the old woman said.
"I see what I see."
"I won't strike you, Martya,"
Aunt Paul said.
"I'm going to give you a gift instead."
She raised her hand in a brief and curious gesture. Geryon saw it happen quite plainly. So there was no way that he could later persuade himself that it had all been some trick of the eye. He was looking directly at Marcia's face and saw the white film drain down off of her eyes, like milk draining down the inside of a glass. The old woman stood frozen to the spot as the bright blue of her eyes emerged from the film which had covered them. And then she screamed. She held up her hands, looked at them, and screamed again. There was in her a scream, a wrenching note of indescribable loss.
"What did you do?"
Queen Alina demanded.
"I gave her back her eyes," Aunt Paul said, sitting down again and rearranging the fur robe about her.
"You can do that?" Alina asked, her face blanching and her voice weak.
"Can't you? It is a simple thing, really."
"But," Queen Porin objected,
"with her eyes restored, she will lose that other vision, won't she?"
"I imagine so," Aunt Paul said.
"But that is a small price to pay, isn't it?"
"She'll no longer be a witch, then," Porin pressed.
"She wasn't really a very good witch anyway," Aunt Paul said. "Her vision was clouded and uncertain. It is better this way. She won't be disturbing herself and others with shadows any more."
She looked at King Anhug, who sat frozen with awe beside his half-fainting queen.
"Shall we continue?" she asked calmly. "Our ship is waiting."
The horses, as if released by her words, leaped forward, and the sleighs sped away from the temple, spraying snow from their runners. Geryon glanced back once. Old Matya stood on the steps of the temple, looking at her two outstretched hands and sobbing uncontrollably.
"We have been privileged to witness a miracle, my friends," Hetar said.
"I gather, however, that the beneficiary was not very pleased with it," Silk said dryly.
"Remind me not to offend Bulgara. Her miracles seem to have two edges to them."
Chapter 21 The low slanting rays of the morning sun glittered on the icy waters of the harbor as their sleighs halted near the stone quays. Greldik's ship rocked and strained at her hawsers, and a smaller ship nearby also waited with seeming impatience. Hetar stepped down and went over to speak with Kohag and Queen Silar. The three of them talked together quietly and seriously, drawing a kind of shell of privacy about them. Queen Ailina had partially regained her composure and sat in her sleigh straight-backed and with a fixed smile on her face. After Anheg had gone to speak with Mr. Wolf, Aunt Paul crossed the icy wharf and stopped near the sleigh of the Queen of Kerik.
"If I were you, Ailina," she said firmly, "I'd find another hobby. Your gifts in the arts of sorcery are limited, and it is a dangerous area for dabbling. Too many things can go wrong if you don't know what you are doing. The queen stared at her mutely. Oh, and one other thing, Aunt Paul said. It would be best, I think, if you broke off your connections with the bear cult. It is hardly proper for a queen to have dealings with her husband's political enemies. Eileena's eyes widened.
Does Anhag know?
She asked in a stricken voice. I would not be surprised, Aunt Paul said. He is much more clever than he looks, you know. You are walking very close to the edge of treason. You ought to have a few babies. They would give you something useful to do with your time, and keep you out of trouble. That's only a suggestion, of course, but you might think it over. I've enjoyed our visit, dear. Thank you for your hospitality. And with that she turned and walked away. Silk whistled softly.
That explains a few things.
Explains what? Geryon asked.
The High Priest of Balar's been dabbling in Cherek politics lately. He has obviously gone a bit further than I'd thought in penetrating the palace.
The Queen?
Geryon asked, startled. Eileen is obsessed with the idea of magic. The bear cultists dabble in certain kinds of rituals that might look sort of mystical to someone as gullible as she is. He looked quickly toward where King Rhodar was speaking with other kings and Mr. Wolf. Then he drew in a deep breath.
Let's go talk to Porin, he said, and led the way across the wharf to where the tiny blonde queen of Drasnia stood looking out at the icy sea.
Highness, Silk said deferentially.
Dear Kaldar, she said, smiling at him,
could you give some information to my uncle for me?
Of course.
It seems that the Queen Eileena's been a bit indiscreet, Silk said. She has been involved with the bear cult here in Cherek.
Oh, dear. Does Anhig know?
Hard to say. I doubt if he'd admit it if he did. Geryon and I happened to hear Pilgera tell her to stop it.
Oh, I do hope that puts an end to it,
Porin said.
If it went too far, Anhag would have to take steps. That could be tragic.
Pilgera was quite firm. I think Eileena will do as she was told, but do advise my uncle. He likes to be kept aware of this kind of thing.
I'll tell him about it.
You might also suggest that he keep his eyes on the local chapters of the cult in Boktor and Kotu, Silk suggested. This kind of thing is not usually isolated. It's been about 50 years since the last time the cult had to be suppressed. Queen Porra nodded gravely.
I'll see to it that he knows. I've got some of my own people planted in the bear cult. As soon as we get back to Boktor, I'll talk with them and see what's afoot.
Your people? Have you gone that far already? Silk asked in a bantering tone. You're maturing rapidly, my queen. It won't be long until you're as corrupt as the rest of us.
Boktor's full of intrigue, Kaldar, the queen said primly. It is not just the bear cult, you know. Merchants from all over the world gather in our city, and at least half of them are spies. I have to protect myself and my husband.
Does Rhodar know what you're up to? Silk asked slyly.
But of course he does. He gave me my first dozen spies himself, as a wedding present.
How typically Drasnian, Silk responded.
It is only practical, after all. My husband's concerned with matters involving other kingdoms. I try to keep an eye on things at home, to leave his mind free for that kind of thing. My operations are a bit more modest than his, but I manage to stay aware of things.
She looked at him slyly from beneath her eyelashes.
If you ever decide to come back to Boktor and settle down, I might just be able to find work for you.
Silk laughed. The world seems to be full of opportunities lately. The queen looked at him seriously.
When are you coming home, Kaldar? When will you stop being this vagabond Silk and come back to where you belong? My husband misses you very much, and you could serve Drasnia more by becoming his chief adviser. than by all of this flitting about the world.
Silk looked away, squinting into the bright wintry sun.
No, not just yet, Your Highness.
Belgrath needs me too. And this is a very important thing we are doing just now. Besides, I am not ready to settle down yet. The game is still entertaining. Perhaps some day, when we are all much older, it won't be any more. Who knows?
She sighed then.
I miss you too, Keldar, she said gently.
Poor, lonely little queen, Silk said half-mockingly.
You are impossible,
she said, stamping her tiny foot.
Oh, one does one's best, he grinned back.
Hetar had embraced his father and mother and leaped across to the deck of the small ship King Anhig had provided to them.
Belgrath, he called as the sailors slipped the stout ropes that bound the ship to the quay. I'll meet you in 2 weeks at the ruins of Vohachon.
We'll be there, Mr. Wolf replied.
The sailors pushed the ship away from the quay and began to row out into the bay. Hetar stood on the deck, his long scalp lock flowing in the wind. He waved once, then turned to face the sea. A long plank was run down over the side of Captain Graldick's ship to the snow-covered stones.
"Shall we go on board, Geryon?" Silk said.
They climbed the precarious plank and stepped out onto the deck.
"Give our daughters, my love,"
Beric said to his wife.
"I will, my lord,"
Meryl said, in the same stiffly formal tone she always used with him.
Have you any other instructions?
I won't be back for quite some time, Beric said. Plant the south fields to oats this year, and let the west fields lie fallow. Do whatever you think is best with the north fields, and do not move the cattle up to the high pastures until all of the frost is out of the ground.
I shall be most careful of my husband's lands and herds, she said.
They are yours, too.
As my husband wishes.
Barak sighed.
You'll never let it rest, do you, Meryl?
My lord.
Forget it.
Will my lord embrace me before he leaves?
What's the point?
Barak said. He jumped across to the ship and immediately went below. Aunt Paul stopped on her way to the ship and looked gravely at Barak's wife. She looked as if she were about to say something. Then, without warning, she suddenly laughed.
"Something amusing, Lady Pulgara?"
Meryl asked.
"Very amusing, Meryl,"
Aunt Paul said with a mysterious smile.
"Might I be permitted to share it?" "Oh, you'll share it, Meryl. But I wouldn't want to spoil it for you by telling you too soon."
She laughed again, and stepped onto the plank that led to the ship. Jernic offered his hand to steady her, and the two of them crossed to the deck. Mr. Wolf clasped hands with each of the kings in turn, then nimbly crossed to the ship. He stood for a moment on the deck looking at the ancient snow-shrouded city of Val'Alon and the towering mountains of Sharrick rising behind.
"Farewell, Belgarath," King Anhig called.
Mr. Wolf nodded.
"Don't forget about the minstrels," he said.
"We won't," Anhig promised. "Good luck."
Mr. Wolf grinned and then walked forward toward the prow of Greldick's ship. Garin, on impulse, followed him. There were questions which needed answers, and the old man would know if anyone would.
"Mr. Wolf,"
he said when they both reached the high prow.
"Yes, Garin."
He was not sure where to start, so Geryon approached the problem obliquely.
"How did Aunt Paul do that to old Marcia's eyes?"
"The will and the word,"
Wolf said, his long cloak whipping about him in the stiff breeze.
"It isn't difficult."
"I don't understand."
"You simply will something to happen," the old man said, "and then speak the word. If your will is strong enough, it happens."
"That's all there is to it?"
Geryon asked, a little disappointed.
That's all."
"Is the word a magic word?"
Wolf laughed,
looking out at the sun glittering sharply on the winter sea.
No, there aren't any magic words. Some people think so, but they are wrong. Grolems use strange words, but that's not really necessary. Any word will do the job. It's the will that's important, not the word. The word is just a channel for the will.
Could I do it?
Geryon asked hopefully. Wolf looked at him.
I don't know, Geryon. I wasn't much older than you are the first time I did it, but I had been living with Aldor for several years. That makes a difference, I suppose.
What happened?
My master wanted me to move a rock. He seemed to think it was in his way. I tried to move it, but it was too heavy. After a while, I got angry, and I told it to move. It did. I was a little surprised, but my master didn't seem to think it so unusual.
You just said move? That's all?
Geryon was incredulous.
That's all. Wolf shrugged. Seemed so simple that I was surprised. I hadn't thought of it before. At the time, I imagined that anybody could do it. But men have changed quite a bit since then. Maybe it isn't possible anymore. It's hard to say, really.
I always thought that sorcery had to be done with long spells and strange signs and things like that.
Those are just the devices of tricksters and charlatans. Oh, they make a fine show and impress and frighten simple people. But spells and incantations have nothing to do with the real thing. It's all in the will. Focus the will and speak the word, and it happens. Sometimes a gesture of some sort helps, but it isn't really necessary. Your aunt always seems to want to gesture when she makes something happen. I've been trying to break her of that habit for hundreds of years now.
Geryon blinked.
Hundreds of years? Well, how old is she?
Older than she looks. 'Tisn't polite to ask questions about a lady's age, however.
Geryon felt a sudden, shocking emptiness. The worst of his fears had just been confirmed.
Then she isn't really my aunt, is she?
What makes you say that?
Well, she couldn't be, could she? I always thought that she was my father's sister, but if she's hundreds and thousands of years old, it would be impossible.
You're much too fond of that word, Geryon. When you get right down to it, nothing, or at least very little, is actually impossible.
But how could she be? My aunt, I mean.
All right. Olgara is not strictly speaking your father's sister. Her relationship to him is quite a bit more complex. She was the sister of his grandmother. His ultimate grandmother, if there is such a term. And of yours as well, of course.
Then she'd be my great-aunt,
Geryon said with a faint spark of hope. It was something, at least.
I don't know that I would use that precise term. Around her, she might take offense. Why are you so concerned about all of this?
I was afraid that maybe she'd just said that she was my aunt, and that there wasn't really any connection between us at all. I've been afraid of that for quite a while now.
Why were you afraid?
It's kind of hard to explain it. You see, I don't really know who I am or what I am. Silk says I'm not a Sindar, and Barak says I look sort of Riven, but not exactly. I always thought I was a Sindar like Durnik, but I guess I'm not. I don't know anything about my parents or where they came from or anything like that. If Aunt Paul isn't related to me, then I don't have anybody in the world at all. I'm all alone. And that's a very bad thing.
But now it's all right, isn't it? Your aunt is really your aunt. At least your blood and hers are the same.
I'm glad you told me. I have been worried about it.
Greldic's sailors untied the hawsers and began to push the ship away from the quay.
Mr. Wolf,
Geryon said as a strange thought occurred to him,
Yes, Geryon.
Aunt Paul really is my aunt. Or my great-aunt?
Yes.
And she's your daughter?
I have to admit that she is, Wolf said wryly. I try to forget that sometimes. But I can't really deny it.
Geryon took a deep breath and plunged directly into it.
If she's my aunt, and you're her father, wouldn't that sort of make you my grandfather?
Wolf looked at him with a startled expression.
Why, yes.
He laughed suddenly.
I suppose that in a way it does. I had never thought of it exactly like that before.
Geryon's eyes suddenly filled with tears, and he impulsively embraced the old man.
Grandfather,
he said, trying the word out.
Well, well,
Wolf said, his own voice strangely thick.
What a remarkable discovery.
Awkwardly, he patted Geryon's shoulder. They were both a little embarrassed by Geryon's sudden display of affection, and they stood silently watching as Greldic's sailors rowed the ship out into the harbor.
Grandfather,
Geryon said after a while.
Yes?
What really happened to my mother and father? I mean, how did they die?
Wolf's face became very bleak.
There was a fire,
he said shortly.
A fire?
Geryon said weakly, his imagination lurching back from that awful thought of the unspeakable pain.
How did it happen?
It's not very pleasant, Wolf said grimly. Are you really sure you want to know?
I have to, Grandfather. I have to know everything I can about them. I don't know why, but it's very important.
Mr. Wolf sighed.
Yes, yes, Geryon. I guess it would be at that. All right, then. If you are old enough to ask the questions, you are old enough to hear the answers.
He sat down on a sheltered bench out of the chilly wind.
Come over here and sit down.
He patted the bench beside him. Geryon sat down and pulled his cloak tightly around him.
Let's see. Wolf scratched thoughtfully at his beard. Where do we start?
He pondered for a moment.
Your family is very old, Geryon,
he said finally.
And like so many old families, it has a certain number of enemies.
Enemies?
Geryon was startled. That particular idea had not occurred to him before.
It's not uncommon. When we do something someone else does not like, they tend to hate us. The hatred builds up over the years until it turns into something almost like a religion. They hate not only us, but everything connected with us. Anyway, a long time ago, your family's enemies became so dangerous that your aunt and I decided the only way we could protect the family was to hide it.
You're not telling me everything.
No, I'm not. I am telling you as much as it is safe for you to know right now. If you knew certain things, you would act differently, and people would notice that. It is safer if you stay ordinary for a while longer.
You mean ignorant.
All right. Ignorant, then. Do you want to hear the story, or do you want to argue?
I'm sorry.
It's all right, Wolf said, patting Geryon's shoulder. Since your aunt and I are related to your family in a rather special way, we were naturally interested in your safety. That's why we hid your people.
Can you actually hide a whole family?
It's never been that big of a family. It seems for one reason or another to be a single, unbroken line. No cousins or uncles or that kind of thing. It's not all that hard to hide a man and a wife with a single child. We have been doing it for hundreds of years now. We've hidden them in Tornidra, Riva, Terek, Drasnia, all kinds of places. They have lived simple lives. Artisans, mostly. Sometimes ordinary peasants. The kind of people nobody would ever look at twice. Anyway, everything had gone well
until about 20 years ago. We moved your father, Geran, from a place in Orindia to a little village in eastern Sindaria, about 60 leagues southeast of Derin, up in the mountains. Geran was a stonecutter. Didn't I tell you that once before?
A long time ago. You said you liked him and used to visit him once in a while. Was my mother a Sindar then?
No. Hildera was an Algar, actually. The second daughter of a clan chief. Her aunt and I introduced her to Geran when they were the right age. The usual sort of thing happened, and they got married. You were born a year or so afterward.
When was the fire?
I'm getting to that. One of the enemies of your family had been looking for your people for a long time.
How long?
Hundreds of years, actually.
Well, that means that he was a sorcerer too, doesn't it? I mean, only sorcerers live for that long, don't they?
He has certain capabilities along those lines, Wolf admitted. Sorcerer is a misleading term, though. It is not the sort of thing we actually call ourselves. Other people do, but we don't exactly think of it that way. It is a convenient term for people who don't really understand what it is all about. Anyway, your aunt and I happened to be away when this enemy finally tracked down Geran and Ildera. He came to their house very early one morning while they were still sleeping. He sealed up the doors and windows, and then he set it on fire.
I thought you said the house was made of stone.
It was. But you can make stone burn if you really want to. The fire just has to be hotter, that's all. Geran and Ildera knew that there was no way they could get out of the burning house, but Geran managed to knock one of the stones out of the wall, and Ildera pushed you out through the hole. The one who had set the fire was waiting for that. He picked you up and started out of the village. We could never be sure exactly what he had in mind. Either he was going to kill you, or maybe he was going to keep you for some reason of his own. At any rate, that's when I got there. I put out the fire, but Geran and Ildera were already dead. Then I went after the one who had stolen you.
Did you kill him?
Geran demanded fiercely.
I try not to do that any more than I have to. It disrupts the natural course of events too much. I had some other ideas at the time, much more unpleasant than killing.
His eyes were icy now.
As it turned out, though, I never got the chance. He threw you at me. You were only a baby, and I had to try to catch you. It gave him time to get away. I left you with Pulgara, and then I went looking for your enemy. I have not been able to find him yet, though.
I'm glad you haven't.
Wolf looked a little surprised at that.
When I get older, I'm going to find him. I think I ought to be the one who pays him back for what he did, don't you?
Wolf looked at him gravely.
It could be dangerous.
I don't care. What's his name?
I think that maybe I had better wait a while. Before I tell you that, I don't want you jumping into something before you are ready.
But you will tell me?
When the time comes.
It's very important, Grandfather.
Yes. I can see that.
Do you promise?
If you insist. And if I don't, I am sure your aunt will. She feels the same way you do.
Don't you?
I am much older. I see things a little differently.
I'm not that old yet. I won't be able to do the kind of things you'd do, so I'll have to settle for just killing him.
He stood up and began to pace back and forth, a rage boiling in him.
I don't suppose I'll be able to talk you out of this, but I really think you are going to feel differently about it after it's over.
Not very likely, Geryon said, still pacing.
We'll see.
Thank you for telling me, Grandfather.
You'd have found out sooner or later anyway. And it's better that I tell you than for you to get a distorted account from somebody else.
You mean Aunt Paul?
Olgara would not deliberately lie to you. But she sees things in a much more personal way than I do. Sometimes that colors her perceptions. I try to take the long view of things.
He laughed rather wryly.
I suppose that is the only view I could take, under the circumstances.
Garion looked at the old man, whose white hair and beard seemed somehow luminous in the morning sun.
What is it like to live forever, Grandfather?
I don't know. I haven't lived forever.
You know what I mean.
The quality of life is not much different. We all live as long as we need to. It just happened that I have something to do that has taken a very long time.
He stood up abruptly.
This conversation's taking a gloomy turn.
This thing that we're doing is very important, isn't it, Grandfather?
It is the most important thing in the world right now, Wolf said.
I'm afraid I'm not going to be very much help, Garion said.
Wolf looked at him gravely for a moment and then put one arm around his shoulders.
I think you may be surprised about that before it is all over, Garion.
And then they turned and looked out over the prow of the ship at the snowy coast of Skarik, sliding by on their right as the sailors rowed the ship towards Skamar. And whatever lay beyond. Here ends Book 1 of the Beleriand. Book 2, Queen of Sorcery, will reveal Garion's own dangerous powers of sorcery, and more on his heritage, which underlies their quest. Pawn of Prophecy, Book 1 of the Beleriand, is written by David Eddings. It is a work of fiction. Names, characters, places, and incidents are either the product of the author's imagination, or are used fictitiously. Any resemblance to actual events, locales, or persons living or dead is entirely coincidental. From Books in Motion in Spokane, Washington, this is Cameron Byerly. Thank you for listening.